Hi, everybody. Welcome to Domain Sherpin. Thank you for tuning in to the podcast with the best domain name and digital asset content in the world. Today's episode is a Sherpa short titled Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, featuring Drew and Matt Berry, CEO of Freelancer.com, the parent company of Escrow.com. On Sherpa Shorts, we usually pick a domain topic or two and we dig in for a bit. And today we're going over Escrow.com's Domain Investment Index for the fourth quarter of 2024, talking about some interesting data points and trends highlighted by the numbers in the report. We also talk about .AI domains and how they're trending, why to use an escrow service instead of a lawyer, and some things Matt expects to see further drive institutionalization in the domain space. And as we cover on the show, we're already seeing some of this stuff, like the proliferation of domain financing. But once these things really kick into high gear, it has the potential to drive significant growth in the industry, and then it'll be everything, everywhere, all at once. And remember, if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can also watch the video version at DomainSherpa.com and on our YouTube channel at ds.tv. You can also listen to the shows on Apple and Spotify and other podcast platforms as well. So please make sure to hit the like button and the subscribe button and all that good stuff everywhere that you can and help Domain Sherpa grow the pie. We also integrate our shows with Muse.ai, which provides search functionality for the shows and transcripts as well. So definitely check all that out. And huge shout out to DNWE, short for Domain Name Wholesale Exchange. It's a trading platform designed specifically for domain investors, streamlining the process of buying and selling domain names to make it quicker and easier. With a community of over 3,500 investors, DNWE enhances market liquidity, facilitating more efficient transactions with standard domain listings, reverse auctions, standard auctions, and soon-to-be-added portfolio auctions, which will include traffic portfolios. DNWE is part of EW3N, a family-run digital asset investment company based in London, England, that also operates DomainManage.com, which is a global sales platform, and Brandable.UK, which is a marketplace for UK and co.UK domain names. And also, big shout out to Unstoppable Domains, the only ICANN accredited registrar that lets you trade DNS domains on chain and access crypto investors. With 3% commissions, at cost renewals, and hundreds of resellers soon to be integrated, they're a cutting edge marketplace you need to know about and use to get more sales and keep costs down. Unstoppable can save you thousands in registration costs. They have $5.com Fridays and $1.xyz Wednesdays every week, and $5 off all transfers in, no promo code required. And last but certainly not least, shout out to our own business, Media Options, the number one domain brokerage in the world. Find out more at MediaOptions.com, where you can also sign up for our newsletter for the best domain names and domain opportunities available in the market every week, and also featuring key insights and other helpful information related to branding, naming, and domain investing. So with that, it's now time to get into this episode of Domain Sherpa, where all roads lead to domains. What's up, Sherpa Network? Thank you for tuning in today. My name is Jonathan Tenenbaum, a.k.a. JT, a.k.a. J-On, a.k.a. Sherpa Winfrey, and I'm the host and producer of Domain Sherpa, where all roads lead to domains. Today's show is a Sherpa short. That's where we usually take a topic or two, and we dive in kind of quick, kind of not. It's going to depend on how far down the rabbit hole we decide to go. Today's topic and today's special guest, we're going to start with the fourth quarter of 2024 Domain Investing Index from Escrow.com with the one and only Matt Berry, and then we're going to see what else we get into. But real quick, let me go ahead and introduce the guest. Over to my right, I got my boy Andrew Rosner, a.k.a. Morpheus, a.k.a. the Dirk Diggler of Digital Assets, a.k.a. Bob Lee Swagger, the Sniper, a.k.a. Drew, who got what I need, a.k.a. every Rosner has its thorn, a.k.a. never going to give Drew up. A.K.A. Graybeard, the Domain Pirate. What's up, dude? How are you?
I'm great. I'm coming off a little holiday that wasn't much of a holiday. You know, family time is not necessarily chill time, but I had some family coming to visit. It was a great time. Now I am getting back in the saddle, trying to play catch up and, finish off Q1 strong. That's it.
All right. I dig it, man. I dig
it. Laser focused.
All right. Well, we have a very, very special guest for the first time on the show since I've been host. Maybe first time ever. I feel like Matt's
Matt's been on before.
No.
Nothing exists before I was the host.
That was a while ago.
Far as I'm concerned, it's like a BC type of deal. You know what I mean? But let's go ahead and introduce our special guest. Below me, we got the one and only Matt Berry, a.k.a. Matt Berry Manilow, a.k.a. Matt Berry White, a.k.a. Matt Barrington Levy, a.k.a. Matt the Sweeter the Berry, the Sweeter the Juice, a.k.a. Freelancer Armstrong, from Adelaide, Australia, renowned technology entrepreneur, CEO of freelancer.com, the parent company of escrow.com, led Freelancer to a public listing in 2013, reaching a market cap over $1 billion, that's with a B, multiple Webby Awards, degrees from the University of Sydney, Stanford, Macquarie, I mean, adjunct associate professor in Sydney, teaching cryptography, tech ventures, frequent speaker at events like South by Southwest, recognized with awards like BRW Entrepreneur of the Year and EY Technology Entrepreneur, driving innovation in the digital economy. That came right from Grok, by the way, just so you know, Grok is giving you a lot of props and a lot of shout outs. The one and only Matt Berry, welcome to the show, man. How are you?
Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Well, it's good to have you, and we appreciate it. And yeah, so
the only cryptographer I know that doesn't like Bitcoin.
Hey, that's a whole topic.
That's an 8-hour podcast.
Is that what we're doing? Because
I'm just throwing it out there. Yeah. You know what I mean? You got to use.
It's one of the many things I get shit for on Twitter. You know,
it's like wearing down glass in the ocean. You know what I mean? Just slow, one wave at a time.
That's it. That's how these coral reefs get all.
If only it traded like gold is right now. So we got 3,020 today.
Gold's good. Bitcoin's better. I love both.
I like that. Gold is good. Bitcoin's better. I could see that on a T-shirt. Yeah. You know, gold is good. Bitcoin is better. All right. Well, we've got a list of some things to talk about, and that was not one of them. But let's kind of dive right into it. We've got the Escrow Domain Investment Index, which will be released. So, Matt, we're recording this show on Tuesday morning. When will the official report?
March 18th.
All right. So, yeah.
There you go. March 18th.
No. March 18th is today. Is the report coming out today? Tomorrow? Oh, okay.
Well, good. My understanding is you have the exclusive break on it. So, yeah. So whenever you release it, it will come out after that.
So perfect. Thursday, so, Friday this week, yeah.
Yep, exactly. So you're
the one dictating the date on this one.
Let's go. So as you are listening or watching the show, and we'll talk about some of the data points, but then definitely get to escrow.com and check out the official fully released report by then, and which will be in conjunction with the show. And some interesting stuff. So I guess let's dive into that, because I know we said we weren't going to go like page by page, but if there were any sort of data points or anything that you found interesting, Drew, I don't know if you've actually look at it before the show.
Yeah, I always read these reports. I think that look, there's a lot of things that I would adjust. And it's actually one of the things I wanted to sort of talk about. But in terms of the way things get broken out, I know there are limitations because obviously you need to anonymize the data thoroughly. But I actually read these reports, in detail because you guys are the preeminent escrow player for domain transactions, in particular for high-level domain transactions, which is the field that we play on. And this is going to basically give us an idea of, is the market in line with what we're seeing? Are we ahead of the market? Are we behind the market? Is the market, being consistent with previous quarters? It's kind of a roadmap, right? And
I think it's actually more than that. Like what we're actually trying to do with this report, it's not just, let's release some data and that's kind of interesting and come to escrow and use us to do your transactions. What we're trying to do is we're trying to slowly establish the things that we need in the industry in order to really take it to the next level. Domains are basically commercial real estate for the internet, right?
Yep.
And there's a huge arbitrage between physical, I've said this many times, between physical commercial real estate and internet real estate, right? You go to Trump Tower, you lease a store downstairs for Tiffany's, and I think that costs something like $7 million a year, or you could buy diamonds.com.
20 is the Fifth Avenue. Fifth Avenue, Tiffany's
20,
is 20.
20 million. Or you could buy diamonds.com, right?
Yeah.
Or, gold.com or something like that, right? And there's a big arbitrage. So there's going to be a strong appreciation. I mean, if you want to buy a large commercial office building in any major city in the world, I mean, you're going to be paying huge amounts of money, way above what you would pay for a premium domain, which would deliver you a worldwide audience with infinite potential foot traffic, right? Mm-hmm. So what are the things that need to exist you know, in the industry in order to really take it from a level which at the moment is kind of transitioning from, I don't know, initially it was, you know, technology enthusiasts would register a few domains, then it kind of with hobbyists, now professional players have come in, like Media Options and so forth, who are, you know, in the business of broking and so forth. And the next phase is going to see things like, you know, domain financing. It's going to see the equivalent of like real estate investment trusts. It's going to see
institutionalization.
Institutionalization of the industry. And that's where it's really going to light up and take fire. And so one of the things you need to do for that is you've got to establish some sort of benchmark by how do you value these things, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, with Escrow, we've been operating since, you know, 1999. We're, you know, licensed everywhere. We've got a lot of volume that's gone through us, and we think we're the premier place for reporting that data. So what we're trying to do with this is, and we've been publishing this report for many, many years now, I think since 2015, I think the data goes back to from memory.
Yeah, more than 2020. I think it's
2020, I think it was the first report came out. But also in that inaugural report, we did a very thorough analysis of stocks versus bonds versus real estate, you know, over time, way back. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do this is really establish, you know, if I go to just a standard institutional financier that knows nothing about, you know, domains, knows nothing about the internet, even, you know, like what is the basis by which they can get an idea of how you value these things, right? Because that is the bastion of being able to determine things like, you know, what should the loan to value ratio be with, you know, when I do provide financing, mm-hmm. you know, if I have a default, you know, how fast can I liquidate, you know, what you know. How long will that take? What will be the recovery given default, and the loss given default, et cetera, and so forth. So really, it's just trying to establish a credible benchmark over time that has data in there that obviously is anonymized because, you know, you do have volatility in the space and marquee transactions and so forth. But trying to get that out there so we can start building these institutions and really taking this to the prime time, because mm-hmm. the domain space has come a long way. You know, register a domain back in, you know, 1996. I've got a domain I registered in 1996. I pay whatever. I got an offer for $5 million US for it just recently. You know, that's a pretty long ride. But this is going to go even further. This is going to go to levels that I think the industry hasn't even thought of yet. And I think also particularly in the world of AI, domains become even more important, because how are you going to instruct the AI to go 100%. Destination and route? The most compact way of doing it is actually through a domain name. Go take me to Coca-Cola.
I don't want to interrupt your flow, but not only is it semantically more meaningful to verbally say a domain name which is spelled mm-hmm. correctly and is, you know, inherently understood, as opposed to some creative brand name, mm-hmm. but also, as we discussed a few shows ago, and I think you got overlooked, but I think it's a very important point. In a world of AI where software development is basically automated, where, you know, basically everything is either supplemented or automated, really the only thing that makes you stand out from anybody else, the only thing that can create a moat or prevent competition or make you stand out from your competition is your brand. And in a digital realm, your domain name is your brand. If your brand does not match your domain name, your brand is diluted, handicapped, a whole bunch of different things. So,
yep.
In the world of AI, I am extra bullish domains.
Exactly. And so that's what we're trying to do with this report. So, and it's one of the many things, and we can talk about it later, about some of the other things we're trying to do to kind of mm-hmm. lay the groundwork or the infrastructure for that, I think, next level up of the space. Maybe what we should do is like skip through the report and kind of bring out some of the highlights. I don't know if you're going to flick any of the slides up or anything like that in the screen. Potentially we could do that. But the fourth quarter, we saw about 92 million in domain transactions. That was up about 16.5% on the year before. Is a little bit down on Q4, but obviously if you have some higher value transactions in there, things kind of bounce around a little bit because there is a little bit of volatility. But you can pretty much see if you get a copy of the report, and they'll be available on our website. I presume you're going to put it on Domain Sherpa and so forth.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There's been a gentle trend up in terms of volume since say 2022, which we're reporting in this report. But you know, we obviously had some pretty spiky performance in 2021 in the world of zero interest rates and the whole crypto.
I think if you boom. Took it back to, let's say, 18, okay, as a pretty good starting point, because prior to that, you had some very weird years with 14, 15, 16 was very strange. But if you went back to 18, I think you would see that same nice, gentle rise. Obviously, like you said, 2020 maybe, you know, had a pivot down. 2021, you know, zero interest rates and money everywhere. It blew, you know, blow off top. Yeah. But I think if you remove the outliers, you're right. It's just a nice, steady, gradual increase.
Exactly. And that's kind of what you want in a space.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. You, in a market, you don't want like this whole, you know, NFT up, down, left,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, sideways sort of thing. You kind of want that just gentle, gradual appreciation because that's the foundation
of a
sustainable, interesting asset class, you know, as from an investor's perspective.
Yep.
So we've seen that trend up. I do, and I've said this actually probably prematurely a year ago. I think a year ago, when I was on your last podcast, I expected it to really ramp again in a big way with the AI boom. I really did expect, with a lot of financing flowing in to, you know, a very large scale to the AI space, that you would see some pretty crazy valuations kind of come back again, like we saw in 2021.
And we did, right? We saw a few marquee transactions at chat.com. You know, we did agent.com.
That was public. That was in the HubSpot filings for that. It was 15, exactly. 15 million. So we'll talk about that. You know, this year we've seen we have seen a couple this year actively. Around the, I'll say, $7.5 to $15 million mark. There's been a couple that have been coming through, and you know, I certainly think that, you know, we're going to see there are some things we've seen here or there for some very, very punchy valuations. That I think, you know, I think we're going to see a pretty marquee valuation in a not too distant future. That will.
We just saw a report come out today from. I can't think of the name of the company, but Vivid Seats. They just reported their purchase of LasVegas.com. That was $30 million. Yep. Some people are misreporting it. They're putting a 17 point something valuation on it. But that was actually the present value valuation of future payments that they're putting on their accounting. But the actual purchase price is $30 million something. So,
I've seen some things that are trying to be arranged for numbers higher than that. Yeah, you know? And I certainly think there's at least one transaction I know that happened in the last 12 months that we did, where it could have been, it could have been a very, very high valuation. That let me just say it this way, the timing of a certain venture financing was held back until the domain name transfer completed, and then the marquee announcement happened, and if that was not the case, you know, I think that domain could have gone for $50 million to $100 million. Even it could have gone for a huge price, but it's still a very good price, I'm sure, for whoever sold it. Based upon what they paid it for originally. But I think we'll continue to see that. And if you look through a whole bunch of the different classes,
Chinese,
kind of close, but not that, and not Chinese, and if you look at through all the sort of, the five letters, the six letters, whatever, you know, if you zoom out, for the most part, avoiding a few little spikes here or there for obviously some truly marquee names, you do see that trend. And in fact, some of the different classes actually trending, reasonably strongly. I do welcome any feedback from yourself or any of the listeners actually on what sort of data I'd like to see in this report, because I actually did instruct the account management team to go out literally 3 months ago and ask all the brokers, like, should we tweak the categories, give us the feedback, because we want to have an enduring report. And the whole purpose of this, from my perspective, really, in addition to obviously helping the industry and so forth, is something I can put in front of a wholesale financier. That can provide, you know, facilities for, you know, large scale financing for this space.
Yep.
And for that, you know, we want to make sure the categories are reflective of what they should be in the industry.
I think really the only, I would say there's two critiques I would make of the categorization. One is, you guys combine two-letter and three-letter.coms, and I understand from a commoditized standpoint, these are the most liquid domain names. You know, they regularly trade hands among investors. It's more easy to track, but you know, it's basically an order of magnitude difference in valuation between a two-letter and a three-letter, even at a wholesale level. And so, or in particular at a wholesale level, it's even two orders of magnitude difference. So I think that two letters should really be isolated. I think that's a very important asset class within domain name sub-asset class. And I know there's not a ton of them that trade. And so that's probably the reason you combine them with the three letters is to further anonymize the data. But, you know, I think if you're just talking about average sale price, even if there was one domain that traded, people don't know that as long as you don't talk about volume. But I would like to see
the issue with two letter domains is only, what, 26 squared number of
676. Yeah,
exactly. So you everyone can track that and see if something changes registration in the quarter, and it kind of gets. I mean, because I'm looking at the data now. I mean, like the valuation of that category combined jumps between 60K in a quarter or what, roughly, and 2.5 million. So
yeah,
you know, even how we've got it here, I think is a little bit. You know, I'm a little bit not happy. So,
well, I hear you, but there is a huge number of better.coms that generally trade in a quarter. And some of those are wholesale, some of those are end users. And so there's a very big discrepancy between pricing. So I guess what I'm just trying to say is like that combined category of two-letter.coms and three-letter.coms, it doesn't give you much signal. Because there's too much noise. There's too much wholesale data in there, particularly among three letters.
Maybe we've got to do it over a bigger time period or something.
Maybe
break it out and do it annually or something.
Yeah,
I do.
And then the second one is that I've always really liked the four letters because I think that's actually like a really good barometer of the industry. Okay, I've said for about a decade, I think a four-letter.com is basically the holy grail of branding. If you've got a four-letter pronounceable word with a positive connotation, it's pretty easy to spell. Pretty much that's the holy grail of branding, mm-hmm. from my experience. And so I really appreciate the four-letter category, but I think it could even be further extrapolated and provide more signal by saying four-letter words and then four-letter acronyms. So if it's, you know, hjqy.com, that's got nothing to do with wall.com or you know, jump.com
we'll look at the data. Like I actually did suggest this earlier to my team that maybe we could do dictionary words versus non-dictionary, and we just have to look at liquidity and
another thing that could be added. This is not a critique of existing data, but I, you know, you love macroeconomics even more than I do and are better versed in it than I am, but I do love me some macroeconomics. And so, you know, I look at sort of what's happening in the United States and the new administration. I look at, you know, where are we going from here, you know, economically, from a global perspective. And I think, you know, certain emerging markets are going to be very interesting and others are going to take a beating. And I think that foreign language domain names could be a very, you know, I don't know how easy it is for you to track that without manually sort of tagging each name, but it would be interesting
actually, it's a bit like password cracking. Yeah, there's all these different word lists that people use for password cracking. Yeah, I guess we can just figure out what you know, run John the Ripper against the
exactly.
That's actually some good feedback, and I'll
I'm interested in that because what we're seeing is a modest increase in demand and in sales of foreign language domain names, and also an increase in ccTLD domain sales. Although, to be clear, because you'll have these people who are, you know, .ai for the win, right? It's not .ai or .ai. You know, it's literally people that want a local presence in a local market.
Yeah.
.de, .co.uk, .be, .whatever, AR for Argentina.
Yeah,
people want local presence more and more and more. And I think that based on the macroeconomic outlook that I have, I think that that is a trend that will increase. That, yes, people want their big global brand, but more and more, they're also going to need a local presence particularly in a world where tariffs become ubiquitous.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, I frequently do Google searches where I do, you know, site colon AU, for example. I live in Australia because I want to find either a product that's for sale locally and not from an overseas website, or I want to find news from a local Australian source, not global news. Because otherwise, if I type in a query, it just gives all these random articles about stuff I'm not interested in. So there are a whole bunch of reasons why you want that. So I'll take that to note. And and also, I do welcome if anyone listening to this has got some feedback on some categorization you'd like to see, please just send me an email. I'm just matt@escrow.com. And I'd be love to get your feedback.
Say that one more time. Say the email a little bit slower.
matt@escrow.com.
That's easy enough. One thing I think would be interesting because, looking at this, I mean, you've got data in here going back to 2016. You know, when you have the Q4 report, you know, it's an opportunity to really show sort of year over year trends, which I think would be kind of cool, you know, and then make the end of year report even sort of special in that if you just had a couple of these same charts, but you just, you know, did the annual joint to be able to see year over year what that overall performance looks like, I think that would be pretty cool. You know, especially on the big.
I think we used to do that, and looking through, I think someone got a bit slack this year and didn't. So I think this might give us an opportunity to. I think this might actually give us an opportunity to actually go through all the data, go back to probably 1999, and do a big, omnibus, almanac or whatever you want to call it, refresh.
Yeah, I think is, you know, for me, big takeaway. You know, you guys are doing $400 million a year almost, right, in sales of domain names. I think, you know, $500 million. I think
sometimes 600. I think we did 600.
I wouldn't know from the report because I can't see that. But I'm just kidding. But but I do think that that's an important piece to, you know, when you talk about the big sort of macro picture and we get into some things about institutionalizing areas in the space, domain financing, you know, we'll get into some of the stuff we can talk about. Just the scope, I think, is important just to remind people. I know it sounds simple, but it's really just to let people know the size of this and, you know, that it matters. And there's opportunity, which creates even more opportunity here. So,
yeah, I mean, based on my estimates, you guys are handling roughly 30-40% of the global domain market. And that's also accounting for the fact that most of the transactions, like I'm looking at page 4. Total transaction value by region, right? And China is, I would, in my opinion or assessment, highly underrepresented here because of, you know, capital controls, et cetera. And so you've got a lot of local providers of escrow and transaction processing locally in China and in Hong Kong. And so if China and let's just say Asia more broadly were more represented here, if there weren't those capital controls, you would probably even have a higher portion of the market share. But that's pretty impressive because that includes, you know, auctions, expired auctions, that includes marketplaces. I think, you know, we estimate roughly $1.5 billion a year in the domain aftermarket. Mm-hmm. Again, aftermarket. And you guys are doing about a third of that, at least.
And we also now have a checkout solution, which we're making even slicker because we're actually going into Shopify. So we've got we're actually in beta right now. In fact, if there are any domain participants out there would like to build a Shopify shop and use escrow, you'll be able to do that. Just send us an email and we'll hook you up with the beta program for that. But
what would the fees be on that?
It's basically the same.
Okay.
Yeah. As part of all of that, I think we can hit a lot of the lower end part of the market that we're not currently doing. There's a lot of domain forums out there and so forth that don't even have a checkout. I asked NamePros the other about a year ago or whatever you guys should integrate us. And they go, yeah, no problem. They put it on their landing page. I said, no, in the forums, like, you know, and I haven't done it. So we'll get around to, you know, places like that, and I think we'll just make it easier to transact, and we'll get it, obviously more volume going.
You know what would be really cool? I don't know what the demand is, but it's this idea I've just been flirting with for probably 4 or 5 years now, is the ability to sell domain names. And I think that we're getting to a tipping point where this could be start getting interesting. Selling domain names in real time on social media using some instant checkout link where I could post a domain for sale on Twitter or X rather. And, you know, you could just say, boop, and then it goes through Shopify, click done, you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. No need to discuss, no need to do, you know, get email addresses, just boom, here you go.
Yep.
That would be awesome.
Well, let's see if we can do it. So I could get feedback to the product managers for that.
All right. So
back to the report, probably. You wanted to talk about AI.ai.
Yeah, I mean, I see AI prices, you know, in line with my thesis, in line with what the preaching I've been doing on here, which is, you know, not to be against .ai. I don't care. Yep. I don't, .ai is not a person. I don't, you know, I, you know, great respect for .ai. If that's your prerogative.
.ai is,
you know, my agenda is twofold. One is I'm a broker, and so I want to go where the money is, and I try to be as clear about where the money is as possible. And two is as an educator on this podcast, and that's to try and, you know, not protect, I'm not your mother, but to just educate you to make informed decisions. And I worry about new investors coming in and seeing, you know, some of the old time investors paying crazy prices as an investor to buy a .ai domain name. You know, a year and a half ago, it was very frothy. You had people in the domain investment community paying six figures to buy a .ai domain name. And I look at that and I think, well, who is your end user that's going to pay you $1 million+? Now, could two or five .ai domains sell for seven figures? Sure. No problem. But you can't make that a business. That's an exception, not a rule. And I say this all the time. You cannot build a business on exceptions. You can build businesses on rules. And so you can have a windfall from an exception. You cannot build a business that is sustainable on exceptions. And so, you know, I think that this is to be expected. .ai will slowly cool off as companies mature. They move to their .com. I've given my thesis. I won't, you know, regurgitate the whole thing for you here. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, it seems to me that the data reflects that trend. Is that your interpretation?
Well, I mean, exactly. I mean, it's, what is it, Anguilla? So it's a, you know, in the Caribbean is kind of where you know, the country domain. And, you know, look, it's a nice little street. The volume has been lifting quite rapidly, but it's still Mickey Mouse, right? Like, so we got to, what is it, 2.5 million a volume in the third quarter, and that was only 1 million in the fourth quarter, right? So it's been ramping, you know, the volume, but it's still the small end of town. And it, I mean, it's a little fashionable little street, but it's probably possibly going to be like having a dot internet or dot computer domain
very exactly soon, as this is what I said
AI,
Google, right? Doesn't need search.com. Google doesn't need to be google.search because it's redundant. And in a world where AI becomes ubiquitous, .ai becomes redundant, except for maybe a handful of dedicated AI B2B tool players who it makes sense to be .ai because they don't do anything except produce AI technology that is sold to other businesses that then create a consumer-facing product.
Look, I'll give you a very simple example. I mean, like, I bought freelancer.com, and I bought that in, 2010? Or I think it was about 2010, and I paid a huge amount of money for that domain back then. I think it was one of the top five sales in the year from memory. But I was getafreelancer.com before that with my main business. So, you know, and I thought at the time, Get a Freelancer, it explains what it is. You know, I go into a room, what do you do? I'm Matt from Get a Freelancer. It's obvious you get a freelancer, right? And then, you know, it suggested to me, why don't you get freelancer.com? And you had Microsoft's computer game Freelancer, you had freelance journalists, what did Freelancer mean? And, you know, for many years, I'd go into a room and I'd have Matt Barry Freelancer, and it's like, oh, well, who do you freelance for, right? And when it was get a freelancer, it'd be obvious what have you. But it became immediately apparent to me the second I bought freelancer.com, and what happened was the guy gave me $1.5 million to go buy Get a Freelancer, and I bought that and fixed it up, and, you know, off I went. But the second I bought it and rebranded it, originally I was a bit unsure. It's like, how, you know, it's a brand new brand. I'm building a brand on this brand new name. You know, how, you know, I go into the room. I'm Matt from Freelancer. Okay, what is that? And I have to explain it all. And there's, you know, whatever. But the second I did it, you know, all of a sudden the recall, you know, from journalists when, you know, you, they go, oh yeah, there's this new gig economy and the companies are eDesk, oh, whatever. And Freelancer. I'd always remember Freelancer.
Exactly.
Or someone meets someone on the street, say, hey, did you know you could go get someone online in Bangladesh to build your website for 50 bucks? Oh, yeah. What was that called again? I can't remember what it's called. Google Freelancer. Oh, boom, freelancer.com. Yeah, it's like if I had freelancer.ai and I'm trying to compete against freelancer.com, all that's going to happen is you're going to give me overflow traffic.
Yep.
Right. People are going to type freelancer.com in, and I'll just get your traffic.
It's just brand dilution.
Right. I mean, that's what's going to happen, right? Like someone trying to build a company on freelancer.ai right now, competing against us, all they're going to do is every time they spend a marketing dollar, I'm going to get, I don't know, 20% of that marketing dollar, mm-hmm. just for free. Right.
By the way, 20% is actually the right number. Microsoft did a study, and that's what they demonstrated. They demonstrated that on average, it's about 20% of spillover of traffic.
Well, and also what I think is the second I got freelancer.com, I got a permanent, I think, 30% reduction of my marketing spend forever. And it may even be higher than that, right? I mean, when you get the premium brand, especially the canonical name for the search terms for your industry, like freelancer.com, escrow.com, you know, .. you know, I think that is a permanent discount on your future cash flows paid out to marketing forever. And
for a whole bunch of reasons,
recall
increase your click through rate, increase trust, increase conversion.
Everything. I honestly think it's the best money I've ever spent. Like full stop. In fact, that's why I bought a whole bunch of domain names, some of you, for future businesses I may want to start at some point in the future, and just have that, lock down that name, that canonical name. And so I've got some pretty nice ones. But I just think it's the best money you've ever spent. Like I can either pay Google or someone else or salespeople or marketing people in the future to bring the customers in, or I can pay now and lock in a permanent discount for my marketing efforts. I mean, as simple as that. It's the biggest no-brainer purchase. And I'm not kidding here. This is like literally the truth. It is the biggest investment, the best investment I've ever made running Freelancer was buying that name, right? Unquestionably.
Like, boom.
Yeah. And not
second
just that,
best, I mean, was buying escrow.com.
Yeah, yep. Yep. Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. You know, I was at ICANN last week and got into a conversation with some folks around .ai domains, and so they equated it to .mobi. You know, they said
It's the same thing. I mean, it's a bit nicer than .mobi. It's shorter, it's a little bit nicer looking, but didn't Mobi date, right? Like who would want to start a business on .mobi
right,
now?
It was right in that early 2000s.
Yeah.
Everybody was starting to get a cell phone. The average person, not the, you know, wealthy elite people, but the average person, your average college student now had a cell phone. Your average, you know, person coming out of college or whatever, their first job, they had a cell phone. You know, you paid 50, 60 bucks a month and you got a cell phone plan. And so, as the emergence of everybody, mobile phones becoming ubiquitous, people thought it was a great idea. Well, you're going to have Matt.mobi, and that's the way you'll be able to, you know, get my phone number and my telephone card. It's like my business card. And there will be, you know, all these different weird applications we can do on .mobi. And then it was like, well, now everybody's got a phone. It's ubiquitous. It's just redundant. Why do I need it?
Yeah. Yeah. And not just that, but you also got some sovereign risk there as well. I mean, Anguilla, I mean,
100%
kind of broke. And what if they turn around and say, well, the new registration fee is this much if you're a small business, but if you're a large business, it's 1% of global revenue.
Yep.
Bitly
on Libyan.
Yes. Bitly.
There's a few of them actually. Yeah,
but we just recently saw, you know, that somebody had a website doing online gambling on a .ai domain, and whoops, bye bye, not allowed. Terms of service, you know, Anguilla doesn't allow online gaming.
Well, not just that. I ran around the world and got all the freelancer dot .de/.es domains, you know, in the early days, what have you. I've stopped doing that. But, you know, in the early days, I did it. And so you go to .es and it's, you know, the language is in Spanish and, you know, the defaults to Euros and this, that, the other. I mean, only a few weeks ago, it was like literally this month, my Indonesian domain went down. Because on the .co.id, it's got the same marketplace as Freelancer, exactly the same marketplace. What actually happened was we have projects, and some of the projects I helped me build a gambling site, which is perfectly fine. But someone complained to the Indonesian regulator, and they pulled it down. No notice to us, no nothing. They pulled it down. I mean, we've got it back up again, but it's like something like 2 weeks of the country domain pulled down. And actually, I've got some interesting data on that, if I can look it up, because we actually have exactly what the effect was on signups, because you can still go to freelancer.com and sign up as Indonesian.
That's a perfect A-B test.
But I've got it right here. Let me just see if I can look. So you can see here that around the end of February, you can see the Indonesian line here with a number of users signing up per day. It dropped from about, you know, 2,600, 2,700, yeah, whatever, down to about 1,500, and before it went back up again. So yeah, about half our users there were kind of knocked out for a couple of weeks, while that domain was taken offline. So that's kind of interesting, because I don't think there's a lot of data out there on
CCTLD usage.
Yeah, and if you have that and the .com. But that was kind of interesting to see that.
Yeah, no, that is, and that's supportive of what I was saying earlier, which is that we are seeing an increase in localization is what I've been calling it. But you know, where you've got a global presence like freelancer.com, but maybe you need a tailored message for a local presence. Maybe there are local restrictions. Maybe there are, you know, local customs or whatever that you need to.
For us, it's just defaulting. You default to the language. You default to the currency. You default to the norms. Like on Freelancer, you need to have the right payment methods.
You're removing friction.
Indonesia is not big on credit cards. You know, it's in rupiah. It's in Indonesian bahasa, Indonesian. You want the support team by default to speak it. You know, you want the signups to default in a certain way. Yeah, whatever it may be, you have certain customizations. Now, it's a complete pain in the ass to run around the world and to do this, you know, like eBay style, like we have, and I've stopped doing it. And there's a couple of really premium. It's also a pain in the ass, let me tell you. In some locations, you need to have a local resident have the domain. I think we lost one of our countries because I registered it and my friend did it for me, and then he didn't forward me any of the emails saying it was going to expire. This is years ago, and some guy in a basement, you know, registered it, and then, you know, what have you.
Look at you. Here you are trying to promote the domain industry, and you're just, you know, utilizing these what's the word?
Squatters.
You know,
speculators.
Slurs. Some guy in a basement.
Oh, look, we fucked up. We screwed up, and then I paid the price, and I haven't bothered.
Yeah,
with that. But yeah.
So talk to me about hyphen domains. Do you guys really transact a lot of hyphen domains? Like, how are these with content, or who's paying seven figures for a hyphen domain?
I'm pretty sure that one would have had content on it. It would have been an established business with content. I'd have to go look, to be honest, on that.
Okay.
I'm not sure what that one was, but I'm pretty sure that would. Oh yeah, I see the spike in 2021.
And then again, I mean, you're over two million in 2020.
Yeah, that would have to be established businesses.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not.
But you know, even so when I say, okay, when I'm reading this, domains containing a hyphen increased in value to 113,000 in fourth quarter 2024, from 71,000 in the previous quarter. Is that total volume or is that average price?
That's total transaction value.
Okay.
Yeah, it's de minimis and it's extremely volatile, and I don't know why we report it, to be honest. And it includes businesses with established businesses and content on it, so that's probably something that's probably not so relevant.
Well, it's funny to me because we're in the middle of a transaction on a hyphen domain. It is a pure hyphen domain. I advise my client extremely clearly not to do this. to buy this domain, but they are adamant that they want to buy this domain. And it is a hyphen domain that they are going to pay seven figures for. I'll be putting it into escrow probably this week, actually almost definitely this week, maybe even today.
Is it like Coca-Cola or something?
No. It's not even a brand. That's the best part. It's not even a brand. It is a generic. This is a pure generic domain name.
Your uncut hyphen.
With a hyphen. and it's about to sell for seven figures. And, you know, it kind of broke my brain because I was advising the client, look, I don't think that you should do this. I don't think that it's a wise decision. I think it's poor allocation of capital. They even could get the one without the hyphen for cheaper. And no, they're not German.
Can you end a domain name on a hyphen?
No, cannot start it or end it with a hyphen.
Right.
Okay. That would be cool though. If you could end it with a hyphen, yeah, exactly. But you can't. ICANN doesn't allow it to start with or end with a hyphen. Mm-hmm. But you can have up to 24 hyphens in the middle. You can have A 24 hyphens.
Oh yeah, I've seen a few of those transacts. Don't remember. Yeah.
My new brand is going to be 24. It's going to just be called 24 hyphens. You know, that'll be it. 24hyphens.com.
Dude, how can you say no, right? To get seven figures for your piece of shit hyphen domain, you have to say no to 25,000. You have to say no to 50. You have to say no to 100, 500.
Yeah. Some of those domains may get some strange, type in traffic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like for example, I own xxxx.com personally.
Yeah.
And that gets ridiculous just random traffic because people put this placeholders in URLs, like someone's developing a website and just puts a placeholder in and what have you. So there might be some hyphenated stuff.
To be fair, 4x.com gets enormous traffic because of xnxx.com, which is one of the world's largest
never heard of it.
Content, let's just say content sites.
Interesting stuff. All right, guys, listen, we're an hour in and we probably only have about 15-20 more minutes before we start to wind it down, but I know we have a few other things, so
let's wrap on financing. Because I think before we get to that,
let me close the loop. So .ai, you know, we're not necessarily saying it's going to go completely the way of .mobi, but I do think it's very interesting.
It's going to zero.
There's not much volume. I mean, we're getting between 1-4 million a quarter coming through.
I think, look, you'd have companies like Namecheap would say, hey, look, you know, because they report on their stuff and you see some of the sales that come through there. And so, you know, it might even be underreported a bit with you guys because you're a little bit more traditional.
But look at the volatility. There's no 5-10.
No, I think that, well, that's all I was going to. I was just going to actually close with the point that you made at the open about the AI piece, which is, you know, yes, we've seen this jump from 22, 21 to 23 and 24, but there's still the overall piece of the pie is just a small sliver. So
it's a fart in the wind. Like, why do you want to go fishing in a puddle when you got a full ocean?
If I registered MeteorOptions.ai, how could I start a business?
Yeah.
Every time I try and do anything, it's just going to go to you guys, right? Like, it's just.
I get it. Cheaper alternatives.
Right? The dot com, you have to go get the dot com and pay the big money, unfortunately. That's how it works.
Tell them, Matt. All right. Yeah, so that's the report. So the report will drop right around the time that you are listening or watching this to the audience. So, you know, we'll have a link on the Billy. Make sure you put the link in the show notes. And then also you can find it on the escrow.com site, I'm sure. And, so it'll definitely be out there in the universe. Definitely check it out. There's a ton of great info in there. So, all right.
MediaOptions is the industry's leading domain broker specializing in domain acquisitions, high-value domain sales, and domain name consultation. As pioneers and thought leaders on the subject of the domain aftermarket and domain name value, plus through their clear domain acquisition service, MediaOptions offers startups and established corporations an unparalleled scope of high-value domain options, providing access to domain names and curation technologies not available elsewhere. MediaOptions believes in the power of a great domain name and is dedicated to helping you obtain yours. Call or email today to put a domain to work for you.
As far as topics, you know, one thing I actually wanted to touch on before we get into the financing piece, because we deal with this some where people are, you know, when we are using escrow for .com for our transactions and, you know, the question comes up, well, can I just use a lawyer? Or, you know, Matt, do you mind talking through that a little bit? I do think that that's an interesting sort of discussion for us to have for a minute, which is, you know, why to use an escrow service like escrow.com versus just having a lawyer do, you know, handle the transaction.
Well, you use escrow to protect the downside on a transaction, right? To make sure it doesn't screw up. Otherwise, just use
insurance.
If everything's fine, just PayPal the money, right? Yeah, you know, whatever, right? I mean, what people, you know, we sometimes when people come in and try and niggle pricing or whatever, they go, oh, I could just use a lawyer and do this at the other. And I asked my lawyer and they said they'll do it. And like, sure, but there's a few things, right? I mean, lawyers just do this as a side service, not as a core business, right? Yeah. So, yeah, they'll do whatever you instruct them. But people don't realize that lawyers represent only one party in the transaction. They don't represent the whole transaction as a whole. Mm. They'll represent the buyer or they'll represent the seller. Right.
By law,
they cannot represent
all parties.
So, which party is the lawyer going to represent? Is it going to represent the seller or is it going to represent the buyer?
Can I pause you for 1 second? Because I think this is a really important point that gets overlooked constantly when I hear people talking, having this conversation. The law as it is, and I'm not a lawyer, I don't play one on the internet, but as I understand it, the law is that a lawyer has the ability to act as an escrow agent for a transaction, given that one of those parties is an existing client, not a new client, but an existing client.
So if there's an existing
relationship, then they can provide escrow services to this transaction and the third party. But it should be clear to you that they represent one of the party's interests and not the other.
That's right. And
this is not a third party escrow service in that case. It is not a third party escrow service. It is a biased party whose interest lies with one of the other parties.
Yeah, and I'm also pretty sure they're not actually an escrow agent in the way that the legislation refers to escrow agents, but they can provide services to set up an escrow account with a bank and so forth for one of the parties, provide their existing client, and they're in the jurisdiction for which the lawyer is licensed, right? So, and it's unlikely the lawyer was going to be licensed in multiple jurisdictions, and so they're unlikely to be licensed in the jurisdiction of one of the parties. Now, what people probably don't understand is, you know, they go, oh, the lawyer will quote me X dollars for it. Yeah, but let me tell you, if something goes sideways on that, the lawyer will just keep sending you bills. They're not going to send you a fixed rate and that's it. They'll just start charging you for other legal services in trying to resolve the transaction. And now your hands
are tied because that domain is held by the lawyer. The lawyer is not relinquishing it because they've got liability. And now they start billing you not at, oh, I'll charge you $500 to do this transaction. I'm going to charge you $1,250 an hour until we get this resolved.
The other thing that people probably haven't asked is, can the lawyer go to the insurance company that provides the lawyer's insurance and provide have they notified their insurance company they're doing this transaction? Because in many circumstances, they'll have to notify. Like if you're doing a $50 million transaction, the law firm can't just put that through without notifying the insurance company and just expect if something goes wrong, the insurance company is going to pay out $50 million. Doesn't really work like that, and then what coverage do they have under what circumstances under lawyer's insurance for protection under various scenarios should something go sideways? So I encourage anyone that gets a quote from a law firm to go, can you please tell us under what circumstances there will be some sort of protection under your insurance scheme in order for us to get compensated if something goes wrong? So we are actually licensed across every state in the US that requires licensing. That was not an easy endeavor. On average, it takes 5 to 7 years per state. We started at the same time Airbnb started because the holding of money for the provision of a service is actually known as escrow, which is a licensed activity in many states. And so Airbnb got pinged in a couple of states early on, and they went out and got licensed everywhere. I didn't own escrow.com at that point in time. If I had it at that point in time, we had a checkout solution. They wouldn't have bothered doing it because let me tell you, it wouldn't be worth a while for them to do it if we were available in a checkout solution form at that point in time.
So do you have to worry about Airbnb coming in the domain game? You know what I'm saying? As all that real estate starts crashing, Airbnb is going to say, well, maybe people want to start using domain names. Like
digital real estate, baby.
Well, maybe we should do daily rentals of domains and people go to sleep in the domain for a day or two.
Well, you say that.
I know, but it's coming.
And jokingly, okay?
It's coming.
But hold on.
Yeah.
it's a very interesting point you make, and I don't want to go down some other rabbit hole, but just for people to start thinking about it, because I hope that somebody, it's not going to be me, but I hope that somebody actually comes up with a solution. Parking is dead, right? Traffic arbitrage, Google has been eviscerated. It's done. They announced it. There will be no more traffic arbitrage. And so that is an enormous component of the overall domain industry that many people don't even understand exists. But I can tell you the biggest players in our industry, that's where they make their money, including the public companies. And so there is a void now, and the universe deplores a vacuum, and somebody needs to come up with a new way to monetize the very valuable traffic that does come to these domain names. And I think that the best way to do that is to create a real-time traffic arbitrage market where people can literally rent your domain name, whether that's an advertiser for a specific campaign, whether they're just staying, whatever it might be. There are a million reasons. Somebody makes a PR announcement and they want just a bunch of market traffic to that PR announcement. There are short-term reasons for the use of domain names. And I think that there is a very good monetization solution to be had in organizing that and allowing and facilitating the short-term arbitration of domain traffic.
I mean, that's probably a good segue almost into DNH. We allow you to effectively lease out a domain on using our DNH infrastructure. It's not really for short-term rentals. It doesn't work for short-term though because
a heavy lift. There's a contract that needs to be signed. Yeah. This needs to be plug and play, click and go.
Yeah. So you could, if you want to rent a domain for, I don't know, 6 months or 3 months or what have you, you could do it through a DNH infrastructure. I just finished up just on the topic of, why would you use us versus a law firm? Well, let me tell you, we've been party to some very marquee transactions for some very marquee participants in the space, both on the corporate side, the broker side, the seller side, you name it. When you're dealing with very large value transactions, there are things that, people are very antsy. It may be somebody who's been sitting on domain for many, many years and now it's worth a huge amount of money. Maybe it's worth $10 million. Maybe it's someone whose entire business has been created and they're retiring and they want to sell that business with the domain and the content or what have you. Or maybe the buyer is going, okay, I think this is actually absolutely a bargain. I think, I'm paying $10 million for it now, but it's going to be worth $50 million, right? Because it may be, maybe something like AI.com. where whoever owns that domain will end up being, the place that sucks a lot of traffic in the AI space because they have the marquee name for AI potentially, right? And so people get a little bit tense, and with any major deal, and you would know this better than anyone, the deal, when I do major contracts in my greater wider group, it's never really there until you have like this moment where, oh my God, it's almost over. That went really smoothly. And then all of a sudden there'd be a moment like, oh my God, the deal's off. Right. And
it's not actually going to happen unless somebody's puking. If somebody's puking, we're on the right track.
almost all the time, you sort it out, you move forward, and the transaction's done. But if something does go wrong, let me tell you, these transactions have a chance to go horribly wrong, right? Because you may have someone selling a domain for, $15 million. And if the transaction doesn't go ahead, they think, I've lost $15 million on this transaction, plus potentially punitive damages, right? Or then you've got the buyer. Maybe the buyer goes, this domain is going to completely change my business. It's something like AI.com. I'm going to a major participant in the space, et cetera. And I don't get hold of it. Therefore, there's future economic loss, this, that, the other. I mean, what happens with these large value transactions is lawyers just come out of nowhere and slap, legal letters start flying backwards and forwards, and then everyone gets joined, right? When you enter these sort of suits, everybody gets joined. The broker, anyone, the arrangers, anyone involved gets...
You get a letter.
What's all they do there is they just join everyone to the suit, and then... later on, it's up to you to try and get yourself out of that suit and go, actually, et cetera and so forth. And so let me tell you, I mean, if you Yeah, if you're a broker and you go, oh, I could get this, I can pay a lawyer $10K to get this transaction done, and it's a $20, $30 million domain name, et cetera, and then something goes wrong, let me tell you, you'll be joined to the suit, and then you'll be spending a lot more trying to get out of it. B, you could potentially be deemed negligent for going down this route if it turns out that potentially the transaction gets voided because the lawyer was not able to provide services in that area. And then if something happens, like the lawyer has a fat finger and types the wrong account number into a wire transfer out. And let me tell you, I was in the UK at one point and someone told me that it's about £100 million a year in the UK gets lost due to fat fingers from law firms typing the wrong thing on a wire transfer out.
Damn.
And also the lawyer's premiums have to go up if they're handling money. So, the insurance companies obviously don't like it. And actually many of the law firms actually don't like handling money, even though they'll say they'll do it. And there was one transaction apparently for £250 million actually at one point that got wired to something like the Cayman Islands, and they never got the money back because it just, someone typed the wrong number and off it goes. A bit like you see in the markets from time to time where some stock will suddenly just tilt because someone's put a fat finger in it. It's like, so you got to think of, so you don't pay us because they're
being great. You pay us
to make sure it does not, to hedge the transaction, to make sure it just goes through, right? And so forth. So yeah, that's kind of why we use us. And we're licensed, and we've got 25 years of history, and we are audited by every regulator 2 years on average per audit. So we're perpetually in multi-state audits. So we perpetually have regulators just going through all the accounts and what have you. And we're bonded in many jurisdictions. So we're required to have multi-million dollar consumer protection bonds, which have never been hit in the 25 years of operating the business. But they actually sit there and we pay for those bonds. So if something does happen, there's money, right? And so forth. And we are truly neutral in transactions. So we're in the transaction, we don't represent the buyer or the seller or the broker. We are just neutral. And our fee is fixed. You pay our fee and that's it, right? So it may be a little bit more than other methods, but we basically in a way are selling, we're kind of in a way buying volatility off you, right?
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said too. Look, as you guys continue to improve the actual functionality and feature set, that you can go onto a control panel and look and see the status of a transaction, and you're not dealing with somebody who you've got to call and say, hey, or send an email, what's the status here, or for something that they don't handle all the time. There is no control panel. Things like that. I mean, there's value in all of that. And I think that's good. Again, this was a bit of a conversation we started to have offline and said, let's just save it for the show. And I think it's good.
Speed of transactions, security of the transaction. I mean, lawyers tend to stuff things up and take 10 times longer. I mean, I'm doing something with a law firm right now. And let me tell you, they told me, we can get this done as fast as your board can sign a resolution. We signed the resolution 3 months ago. We're still waiting for them to kind of get the act together on a bunch of filings.
As a lawyer, I don't know that this feels like we're beating up the lawyers a little bit, but
rightfully so.
Pretty justified. Yeah. So
it was a bit of a segue before to financing, and I just want to talk about that. D&H, yeah. So we've been doing vendor financing for a long time, and Drew, you're very familiar with our services. We've actually now done, I've got the numbers here somewhere. We have done $670 million now of D&H vendor financing transactions. So that's
wow.
Quite a lot. Yeah,
670. Wow.
$670 million.
I didn't realize it had scaled to that level.
Yep. It's about 3,000 transactions, a little bit under 3,000 transactions.
What's your average transaction size?
I can just do the math on that, really. It's 670 divided by me.
Wow, so it's about 20 grand.
$230,000.
Oh, I was off with a zero.
Yeah, about $230,000 for that.
Okay.
And so we've got a long history of that. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to parlay that long history and vendor financing into try and get up a financing option. And I mentioned before how I've bought a few domains over time to kind of lock down canonical names for certain industry segments I might want to launch a business in. So I bought funding.com many years ago. Okay. So we're launching under that under funding.com, which I think is the name to offer funding, pretty much.
Of course.
Finance, maybe. Finance, funding.com. That's pretty much it. I think this will lift the volume of the domain industry by multiples. Because in any asset class, when you bring financing into the industry, you know, two things kind of happen. One is you just open up the liquidity and the volume of transactions, because it becomes easier for, you know, for things to transact because there's financing available. And the second is that you also get further appreciation in the asset prices in that space.
Look, when you decentralize risk, you get more risk. Risk equals price. So if we allow a little bit of decentralization of risk, meaning, okay, a startup comes in, they want to buy the domain, they're willing to put a deposit that's meaningful, that covers basically the default risk to the lender, then, you know, they can afford to pay, maybe it's double, maybe it's 3x.
Well,
my guess, what I've been preaching, I've been saying this for 20 years, from the minute I came into this industry and identified that domain names were commercial real estate, it made perfect sense to me that the evolution of this business required several steps. One is we need an evaluation model. Two, we need insurance. Three, we need credit. And the moment you do that, I think it's probably a 4x increase in the market cap of the domain industry.
Absolutely. And, you know, the default rate is actually pretty low. So, you know, I have to go through and check all of this because I've only done some rough numbers here, but it looks like the default rate's only about 3.6%.
Wow, that's great.
At the moment. And the interesting thing is when you get default, they're actually, provided the collateral holds its value, there is no loss. Because,
yeah,
you know, we hold the name and we can return the name to the seller.
Yeah, well, in some cases, I mean, the defaults actually provide the sellers with even bigger benefit because then they've already, you know, collected cash for their name that they then go and resell. And in some cases, we've seen the lease deals either end, because that's the other thing too. It's some of these deals that aren't leased to own, but instead are actually, you know, effectively licensing and a purchase option, then, you know, where the buyer just says, hey, you know, the plan didn't work out, so we're just going to step away. And the sellers have paid for their names. You know, now they own the name free and clear. So the next deal they make is pure profit. So it's a, you know, just more flexibility, more optionality on the part of the buyers. I mean, these are, you know, increasingly valuable assets that, you know, it's, you know, just gives them more options around how to connect the right end user.
Well, look,
with the right
domain. Keep it simple, right? Just understand the basic premise of this thing, right? Like, as real estate increased in value, people needed loans in order to get into the real estate, right? People couldn't afford to pay the whole house. So they put a down payment. Their monthly mortgage payment was some manageable percentage of their disposable income. And that allowed them to create a foundation from which to grow their life. It's no different in domains. So domain names, obviously, okay. So for example, over the next 5 years, we're going to double the number of businesses that are online. Okay. Over the next 5 years, we're going to add another 2 billion people that are connected to the internet. That's 5 years.
I actually think the number of businesses is actually going to go up quite significantly. And AI is going to be a big driver of that. For
absolutely.
One is because it's going to be so easy to start a business, right, with AI, mm-hmm. because obviously the code starts writing itself and productivity goes to the roof. The other is that, you know, in some areas where there is disruption, you know, and, you know, job losses, because, for example, you know, the accounting firm doesn't hire as many accountants anymore because the accounting's done. I mean, accounting's a classic example because the government doesn't want you to be creative with accounting. You just follow the rules, right? So if the RA can do all of that, you know, what are you using the accountants actually for? Because the government doesn't want you to be creative, right? So, so there's areas like that where, you know, you might have losses. Call centers will have losses. You know, generally there'll probably be less hiring at in the input of the funnel for things like law firms and so on. And what happens in these times is you get a lot of venture creation. You get a lot.
We
of
saw
people.
This in 2020 and 2021. That's why we saw the huge spike.
We saw it in COVID. We saw it in the GFC.
You'll see
it with AI.
Yep.
You'll see people go out there wanting to get a job, going online, people going out there and wanting to hire for cheaper rates, right? And, you know, and so, you know, going out and hiring people online, and you also see new startup formation. And I think with AI, you're going to see a lot of venture creation, A, because it's going to be so easy as well, and B, because some people will be displaced from their old job and they go, okay, and they move up the stack, right? So if you think about AI, all jobs will go up the stack, right? So you were a copywriter, you're now an editor. You were an illustrator, you're now a creative director. You were a programmer, you're now a product manager. and your AI is going to be chasing a lot of these jobs. So
it's a great way to look at it.
So what happens next? You become a CEO, right? You just run your own business, and you've got a bunch of AI out there, kind of, and freelancers out there, kind of pounding out. The ultimate combination, I think, is AI and AAI, freelancers driving the tooling for the AI. Mm-hmm. And it just becomes easy to start businesses, and there'll be a lot of venture creation. And to that, you need a lot of domain names. You need a lot of branding. You need a lot of whatever. But going back to the financing point, I mean, you've got maybe a historical data shows, and I have to confirm this, but it looks about 3.6, 3.7 default rate. But again, I'll just preface this with I only have looked over the last couple of days. Essentially a 0% loss rate for the secure party because you've got full collateral recovery. And, this really only applies to premium names. So we're not talking, green iguana with red shoes.com or whatever. Like we're talking the premium stuff here, right? Because you need to be able to have the ability to liquefy the domain if there's a default.
Actually,
in the case of how you're doing the lending, because you've got different options, whether it's equity to release or whether it's paying out someone halfway through a D&H or whether it's a new financing.
Give us some insights. Like, what's LTV on this? What are some of the, what does a deal look like? How are you approaching this? So I come to you and I've got, obviously, like you said, green iguana with redshoes.com, that doesn't work because it's got no, collateral value.
We'll be targeting the premium names. So these are the names that I guess media options would consider a name that you would actually transact in. So for us, preferentially,
a name that more so a name that I would want to put a bid under, right? So you need something that's
exactly a liquid part of the market that's valuable. Preferentially, the canonical name for industries. So like livestock.com or payments.com. I think things like that. We would do things like equity release. So if you had you own the domain outright, we might be able to give you some a little bit of release of equity. We'd move the domain into our custodial account. You would get some extra cash. You could use that to finance starting a business on that domain or buying another one or doing something else or whatever it may be. A bit like releasing some equity from your home loan, right? Maybe you get a bit older, you own your house outright. You want to enjoy yourself for a little bit, and go on a holiday for your retirement. You get a bit of equity release on your home loan and go do whatever, right?
Reverse mortgages are huge in Australia, aren't they? Aren't you guys kind of like the preeminent reverse mortgage?
We are the preeminent market in the world for fucked up housing. And if you want to know anything more about it, I have a series of YouTube videos and essays on this topic that are trending. There's trending on this topic.
I watched your recent talk. It was good.
It's insane. Like the housing market here is literal insanity. We would offer outright financing on at a certain LVR for the purchase of a new domain. If it's a super premium name and whatever, you put a bit of equity down. We put it in a custodial account. We give you an LVR on that. It just makes it a little bit easier for you to finance that. As you know, you're a hot Silicon Valley startup. Do you really, as a venture capitalist, do you really want them to spend all their money they've raised on the premium name? You want them to have the premium name because you want a permanent discount on
100%.
marketing, maybe a 30% discount forever on their marketing efforts. But do you want to tie up all that capital now? It's like, do you want them to buy their office building and move into their office building? And only it's not really an office building. It's commercial real estate on the high street and the main town, whatever. Do you want them to spend the money on that or do you want them to rent it? Right.
I mean, look, so, the classic rent before you buy, right?
Yeah.
It's like basically every startup, the way we've thought about this, is, utilizing your domain holding DNH, service, is look, why would you want, you just raise some capital. Why would you want to deploy? It's not that the domain's not worth it, but there's a timing. Timing is everything. And so don't deploy all this capital you've just raised into the domain name and now you're sort of stuck, right? It's right before you buy. Every startup basically needs 3 to 5 years to figure out whether or not they've got a business. And so it makes perfect sense to finance or, to lease for 3 to 5 years. And,
but you gotta make sure
you got a call option.
You gotta make sure you got your foot on it, right? So you gotta.
Oh yeah.
You gotta have your option to purchase.
Path to ownership. Right? Gotta have a path to ownership.
And the other thing we're going to look at is, you know, early payout of D&H. So you're a seller, you've got a, you know, you provided vendor finance to someone, you've got, I don't know, 5-6 years on that, you're 2 or 3 years into it, maybe you want an early payout for whatever reason, and you take a bit of a haircut, and we will take over that and manage that. So we've got, I think we've got a huge amount of data now on that, on that space. We've got, you know, we're kind of going through now, you know, if someone does default, how early do they default in the timeline? You know, how quickly can it, you know, what happens in the various scenarios? You know, what LVR would be appropriate? You know, how do you assess the credit worthiness of various participants in the space? ... whatever. But you know, I think we've got some really good data on that, and we're working to get that up and running. So if anyone's interested,
awesome,
in that, again, reach out to me.
And that'll be stood up most likely on funding.com.
That's right. Yeah, we've got a bunch of, I mean, it's been going for a little while.
Will it be integrated at all with escrow?
Yes, it will be, ultimately. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and I think, you know, we can get this away, and I think we will, but the trick here is not to convince domain financiers, right? And alternative asset financiers. The trick here is to get traditional institutional finance, you know, the sorts of, you know, wholesale facilities you'd get normally for home loans or whatever, and you know, convincing them to put up the big money in this space.
For the record, I actually don't even remember. I don't remember the domain name, but it was a big domain. It was a low seven figure transaction, I believe. And we had a client that actually went to Bank of America and got a standard business loan to acquire the domain. They spent, I think, 3 months presenting the business case and, you know, mm-hmm. explaining why this domain yep. name had value, and that you know, there was a retained collateral value of the domain, et cetera. I don't know. I don't think that Bank of America even took the domain as collateral. I highly doubt they wouldn't know what to do with it. But my understanding is that they did provide a domain. Maybe the domain wasn't collateral, so to speak, but it was a loan for the acquisition of a domain name, based on the value of that name, and you know, the business case that could be brought to bear on the name.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know what the security was in that. I tried borrowing money from one of the major banks in Australia. I think the Commonwealth Bank, to buy a business, get a freelancer back in 2009. You know, it was doing about $1 million of revenue, and it was profitable. And mm-hmm. the guy on the phone, who was just the call center operator, goes, I've used that site before. That's really cool. I'll tell my manager. And the manager said, look, we would never, ever, ever lend you money to buy a business like this. If you want to open a shoe store, no problem. It's got stock and inventory. Come talk to us. You know, something physical. But, you know, if you want to buy a website, no, right? But I think that's ridiculous. Yeah. And that's going to change. And
if you know why, the reason, the whole thing is the collateralization stack. They know that if you default, they don't have to worry about it. It doesn't matter if somebody missed. There's a store that they can go and take the bricks and you know, resell it.
Yep. Well, let me tell you, the security of a domain name is actually superior to that, right? Because if I hold the domain name, and we offer this right now. So if you want to do a transaction generally, and you want to put a domain in as collateral, escrow can hold onto that, and, you know, over a period of time and make sure that the interest payments or what have you come through, and the principal comes through, and so forth. But if there is if there's an instance of default and you enter the cure period, you know, as custodian, we could turn off your website.
Yeah.
In a second. And then turn it back on again.
Yeah.
You turn your email off and turn it back on again. Basically, your payments turn off. Your payments turn on again, right? Like,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure in terms of ranking of security in the stack, the first thing you're going to do is pay to keep the lights on. Because the second, 100%. Let me show you. I was an investor in a business that was actually, it's 20 something years ago. It was a darling business at the particular time. It raised, I think, I can't remember, tens of millions of dollars, which is a lot of money for back then. And for whatever reason, it's a funny story, but they had to do layoffs. It was during the first dot-com crash, effectively, a little bit after actually. But they had to do a bunch of layoffs, this business, and they had an overseas development facility in India. And the CEO got fired. The CTO was put in as the CEO and told, okay, you need to lay off a bunch of people in India who are doing all the development. This is a hardware business. And the CTO was a bit didn't really know what to do, rang them up, the office in India, and said, okay, half of you are fired. Anyone traveling, we're not paying for your return expenses, you know, da-da-da-da.
Oh, no.
And the office there rioted, stole all the hardware, including the web server, and the company website went down. And that business was in the process of selling at that point in time. And let me tell you, the website went off, and the whole industry went, did they go bust? And then they're selling the business, and the web server had just been stolen, right? And and so it went down for, like, I don't know, like a couple of weeks, 2 weeks or something, rather. Well, I try to go, gee, who's got backup of the website? And it had been stolen, because it was back in early 2000s, right? So not pre-AWS.
There was no AWS.
Yeah. And let me tell you, that was the end of the business. The website goes down, you're gone, right? The whole industry goes, you're dead. You can't get email. Your site's down.
Yeah. You're done.
Your customers are done, right? So compare and contrast that security to the ability of the landlord to come into a building and lock the doors and try and evict the tenant.
You'll get arrested. Right? I mean, you'll get arrested for trying to defend your right to foreclose.
It's chalk and cheese. So it is premium security. So you have an industry here. It's got a low default rate. It's got a steady appreciation of valuation over time, and potentially for that to blow out. You've got a lot big arbitrage between that and the real world commercial, real estate. Only
you're on the right side of the trend.
You've got the commercial real estate audience.
Depreciating. Digital real estate appreciating.
You've got literally loss given default of zero. Because and depending on the loan type, because you can just return the domain to the seller or what have you. So it's and you compare that to, I don't know, like, you know, Commonwealth Bank in Australia lending against the biggest housing bubble in the history of mankind, you know, at a 17 times median household price to median household income. And one product.
It makes no sense.
Capitalization of Commonwealth Bank is bigger than Goldman Sachs some days of the week, right? Like, wouldn't you want to diversify around to this sort of asset class?
How do you short? What would be the most effective way over a decade to short that? Like if there was one idea that I was absolutely most certain about from my own thesis, it would be the depreciation, in particular, of a place like Australia, housing market over the next decade. Because all insurance has to go up 1.5% in order to see basically a 20-30% depreciation. It'll be
the GFC
values.
All over again here, and it's going to be significantly worse than the GFC. If you want to know more, I've written, and I've actually got some. Just Google "flat out like a nation sinking." It's my latest speech. It's going viral at the moment.
Okay.
You'll be able to see everything on that. But there's plenty on Medium and YouTube. But I think you'll first see it in the regional banks. So these are the banks for things like the Sunshine, Gold Coast, Sunshine Coast, et cetera, which have their second home, holiday home, et cetera.
Yep.
And you'll see it in the credit default swaps, which will be slowly, then all of a sudden, and then just buy puts.
Yeah.
You know, it's gone. It's
over. Yeah.
And they're trying to fix it with mass immigration, which is they're trying to fix it with mass immigration, which is not working because the demographics have changed dramatically. And that's only half the reason. The other half of the reason is the same thing they're doing in the US and Canada and so forth, which is change the voting. So, bring people in and just permanently change everything to blue. So anyway, whatever. But I think it's a very attractive industry. I think it is, I can feel it, that it's probably on the verge of getting to the point where it's going to become institutionalized. And then you're going to see all sorts of things. You'll see the real estate investment trusts. You'll see all the things you see in the commercial real estate market happen. And people go, gee, that was obvious. And the money flood in, right? So what did we think of that before? It's like, well, we've been telling you for a few years, but, you know.
It
always takes a precedent, right? It takes a bit of a precedent, and it goes 1-10,000, right?
100%.
So, yeah.
Yep. It's slow, and then everything all at once, and institutionalization. Institutionalization is.
I mean, you've seen it with crypto, right? Like, they just saw it, with institutionalization of crypto. Now, I have my problems with crypto in that, the merchant adoption is kind of not really there, but we can argue about that in a different podcast. But if you look at the
says the guy who loves gold. Go pay for your shirt at Walmart.
Why should you like gold miners? I like gold miners because they're leveraged.
They produce income.
And they're easy to model, and you got the cash flows and what have you, right? So, and they're geared to the price, right? But you see with the institutional adoption of things, it kind of, and then it floods in, right? So I think this is the next big thing, and a big one. I think it's you were trying to tell me that the monkey on the blockchain, the island on the blockchain was going to be the next big thing. What was that site?
Hold on.
There was a site you rang me up and said, oh, this site is the biggest thing. Was it OpenSea?
OpenSea.
Yeah, OpenSea.
And if you remember that conversation, the reason I got so excited is because I'm looking at this and I'm thinking to myself, these are domain names. That's all these things are, except they don't have any real utility. And so to me, that is what the future of domain trading looks like, is real-time market pricing, where, there is leverage. There is,
well, imagine a domain name with utility.
That's it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If people are trading these NFT JPEGs, with such immense volumes, far surpass domain names. And domain names are literally the original NFT. And domain names have immense utility, as we've just described throughout this podcast. There's no reason to me other than EPP system, which is basically what's holding back domain names. But there are some workarounds. There are some interesting marketplaces, I think, developing around this. And I think that idea still holds true. We haven't gotten there yet.
Well, I think it's coming.
Yeah, agreed.
I think it'll be big money. I think you'll see big money in this space. I think this is going to be commercial real estate is $1 trillion market. Right? Like, this is going to be big money.
Makes sense. It's literally the foundation on which the entire global digital economy sits. And one thing I know for sure is that economy is up and to the right, and the brick and mortar economy is down and to the left.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Trump's in now. I think you're going to get a bit of a crash happening now in the Magnificent Seven, which you got
to do. Reshoring. Reshoring.
You want to clear the decks a little bit and make it Biden's. That was Biden's fault, and then you'll have a massive, I think, rally in the Russell 2000 equivalents and the golden age in America.
Yep.
We shall see. All right. Well, look, we've covered a lot of ground today. But all good stuff. And most importantly, as we led off, we've got the domain index, investment index from escrow.com, Q4 2024, available out now as of the time the show is released. So for those of you out there that are, following the data, that's where you can get it, take it where you can get it, because, the industry can be opaque at times. And huge shout out to Matt and the team at Escrow for putting out this information on a recurring, regular basis. Excited to see the continued evolution, standardization and as he said at the outset, he's not hard to find, matt@escrow.com, and let him know the good, the bad, the ugly. And it's all good. And same thing here, we're not hard to find. So I guess just on the wrap, I'm going to say thank you to Drew. Thank you to Matt for taking the time. It's always appreciated. We're also available, not hard to find, for the good, the bad, the ugly as well. Anybody that doesn't like what they heard on today's show can ask for a refund for what they paid to watch or listen, and we'll happily get that right to you. And, through the new escrow.com payment gateway. But jokes aside,
you can reach me anytime by email. I'm Matt_Barry, BIE on Twitter or X. Keep saying Twitter, but anytime, reach out and happy to have a chat.
Well, I love it. And thank you guys. Much, much appreciated. There's a lot of great stuff in this episode. And to the audience, thank you guys so much. Jokes aside, thank you so much for tuning in. Say it on every show. Without you, there is no us. Drew, you have any final thoughts? Anything last, last words?
Nope. I'm super excited and bullish about the remainder of 2025 and beyond for domains. I think we have a lot of green pasture in front of us.
Yep. Yeah. Excited. Blue skies. And all that good stuff. Matt, any last final thoughts? I know you kind of put a lot out there.
Well, if anyone has any feature requests or ideas about services that Escrow could provide to enhance the industry and take it to the next level, I'm always happy to receive it. So I'm just matt@escrow.com or matt_Barry on Twitter. Reach out to me. And I'm happy to have a chat.
That's where it's at. And the man is not hard to find. All right. Well, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. And we'll see everybody next time here on Domain Sherpa, where all roads lead to domains.